Seahawks fans, wherever you may be, welcome back for another edition of the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Join your host, Bill Alvstedt, and co-host, sports writer and football analyst, Keith Myers, as we talk Seahawks football. Hey, Seahawks fans, welcome back to another edition of the Hawks Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Alvstedt, and I'm here, as always, with Mr. Keith Myers, and we got a lot of stuff to talk about. How you doing, Keith? Good afternoon.
I'm doing good. Yeah, and you're right. There is a lot of stuff to talk about this week. A lot of stuff going on in Hawkville, and
Well, we've made it halfway through. Well, I mean, you know, we'll talk about it because we're gonna debate that. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it just okay? We're 6-2 halfway through the season, and I'll take that record.
When I said not all of it's good, I'm also referring to the fact that Justin Britt is out for the year. Torn ACL, and he's done. So it's the Joey Hunt era on the offensive line now. And that actually might be the last we ever see of Justin Britt in a Seahawk uniform, because he is due.
It could easily happen.
They would save over $8 million against the cap by cutting him after the season as he goes into the last year of his deal, which is a kind of a balloon payment where a lot of the money and it was pushed into the last year.
The only way I could see him coming back is if they restructured his contract and they extended him like a year or whatever and kind of rolled that $8.75 million that we owe him over 2 years. Something like that would make way more sense. He's not coming back on $8.75 million. That's just not going to happen. He's an average center at best in the league on an average line, and we need to find ways to improve that line, and I think that might be one of the spots they decide to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I could totally see them cutting him loose because, you know, he's not worth that much money. It's a lot of money. And then bringing him back on a $3 million a year type extension, give him 2 or 3 years of a new deal that's worth, you know, just slightly more than what he's due to make in one year.
Worth like a DJ Fluker type contract. Mm-hmm. You know, I see that. You know, they would have cut him regardless of this injury, and now this injury makes it more likely that they will.
Yep.
I'm not trying to disparage him. He's been a great pro. He's been there. He's been available. He's been decent. He's had one, I think, good year overall, though, in his entire Seahawks career, which earned him that second contract. Mm-hmm. And I think we can do better. We need to think about the idea of being able to do better than just average. And I think that's what we have in Justin Britt.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think that the problem that I have with that is that you're already going to be replacing Mike Lupati, maybe DJ Fluker, maybe Jermaine Orfetti. And at some point, you want some continuity. And so
I think we need to have a deeper discussion around that, especially in the offseason, because if you take a look at the continuity, the team has a chance to really improve in the offseason. But if you're going to wholesale change your offensive line, when you take a look at some defensive line situations, contracts and so forth that need to be talked about, we could be talking about a complete and utter rebuild if we're not careful, because we got to have a lot of faces that need to be talked about. So
yeah, so I think what we're going to see instead is, you know, we're going to have you're going to see a guy like Posick come back after this back injury and be given a chance to earn a job. You're going to see Jamarco Jones, who's pretty much already earned a job, get more playing time. So that's going to be part of it. And then
Phil Haynes
is going to play into the mix next year. And so
that he might play into the mix before the season's over.
Yeah. I mean, he's still on the PUP list. So they are going to have to activate him here soon because he started practicing a couple weeks ago. Once they do, which I expect them to, even then, because he hasn't been practicing and stuff until a couple of weeks ago, he didn't have a training camp. He didn't have a preseason. He hasn't worked with this offense and this scheme and stuff. So I don't expect him to play much unless there's an injury situation that pulls him into the game.
That is true.
He's going to be, you know, Jones is going to be the third guard, and
probably deactivated on game day.
Yeah. And so you have, you know, Hayes is the fourth guard, which, and he would have been the fifth guard, except for that Joey Hunt is now the starter at center instead of being the fourth guard.
In other news, though, that's positive on the injury coming back front is Ed Dixon. Ed Dixon's been practicing along with Phil Haynes, but Ed Dixon looks like he's ready to go and could play this next weekend, according to Pete Carroll.
And this is one that they've needed. I mean, ever since Disley went down, they've been basically trying to wait it out and survive until Dixon could get back. And it appears they've made it, because that was the whole thing, was they just were trying to get through, you know, a couple of weeks and get to where they get Dixon. Now, Dixon's not as good as Disley, but he's a veteran. He slowly took over the starter job last year after coming in, after being injured for most of, or about half the year. So it's about the same kind of situation, but they're going to add him to the mix and to the offense for the stretch run for, you know, the last eight games. And that's not a bad place to be, because you're getting a good player, an upgrade on the position based on what's currently there. And you're doing it without having to trade away assets to get it, because he's already, you know, here.
Similar situation that it was last year. I think last year, Ed Dixon came back for the last six, eight games of the season, had a small impact, had a couple touchdowns that counted, you know, during the season. So we'll see if he can make a similar impact. I would imagine that he will. I think that that's one of the areas, and when I was looking at this trade deadline coming up tomorrow, one of the areas that we could take a look at would be adding another little weapon for Russell Wilson. When we take a look outside of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Chris Carson, that's essentially the offense. And boy, they could use just one more guy in there that could really make a difference, especially if one of those other guys was kind of shut down. Because as I think we go through this show, it's going to be easy to see the second half of the season is probably a little harder than the first half of the season as far as schedule is concerned. And it looks like we're going to have to score even more points on offense in order for us to be able to have a chance in some of these games coming up. And in order to do that, you got to have weapons. And I think we're a little light right there. Now, granted, we're still top 10 offense, I mean, around 10-ish. I just think maybe one more thing could make a difference. What do you think, Keith?
I don't actually see them making a move for an offensive weapon, because they want to run the ball and they've got, you know, 2.5 running backs that they really like. And I think that that's going to limit the number of passes in every game that they play. And therefore they aren't going to value the weapon. They're going to value Ed Dixon because he can block and give them some of what Disley gave them in the running game.
That's true. Everything you just said is accurate for the first half of this season so far. But we're getting into a stretch of games, Keith, that's pretty formidable. And I think that we could end up being either playing catch up or playing even from here on out in a lot of those games. And Russell Wilson may be called to throw the ball a little bit more than he has in the first half of the season. And that's just total speculation. I know the philosophy and what we want to do, but I think the reality that's going to come up on us is going to be maybe slightly different than that.
And I wouldn't,
but that remains to be seen.
I wouldn't disagree that the reality is they're going to be playing significantly better teams in the second half than they did in the first half. And so the team is more likely to be behind, and they're more likely to be, you know, in a shootout or that kind of thing. I just don't see the team doing it, in part because it's Pete Carroll and he's okay with the 10th ranked offense. That's where he wants to be. That's why they operate slow and that kind of stuff. But when you have a defense, a Pete Carroll defense, which is not good in any way, it's mediocre, Carroll's not going to stand for that. If there's going to be a trade in the next 24 hours, it's going to be for defensive players. It's going to be something that makes this defense at least average, maybe a slightly above average, because it's not good right now. I mean, Matt freaking Schaub just threw for 440 yards against this team.
So, you know, it's cool if you really like this podcast and you like football because we don't spend a lot of time just blathering back and forth, and we just kind of get right into it. And we did. We just kind of blew through everything that we have planned, which is awesome. Just get right into it and just start talking about it, because we have a ton to talk about. We're going to go through some notes and some just kind of stats to open up, and we're going to get into that Atlanta game, and we're going to get into the Tampa Bay game coming up next Sunday at home. And then we'll take a look at the first half of the season, and we'll look and see what we've got ahead of us for the second half and try to make sense of our 6-2 record where everyone doesn't feel good. It's a 6-2 record on a team that, you know, that looks like, you know, we could at least get to 10, 11 wins, but nobody's feeling it. It's just awful, and we'll try to figure out why that is. So let's just kind of go through some of these points, Keith, and then maybe you can provide some feedback or some perspective on some of these things. The Seahawks defense posted a season-low EPA, expected points over average, of negative 14.89 versus the Falcons. They were that bad.
It's not like the Falcons are a good offensive team, especially without their quarterback. Yeah.
Well, and that EPA, that 14.89 negative, was all in the second half. Like the first half, they were awesome. They were positive, and the offense was scoring on almost every drive, and it was crazy. It was literally the tale of two halves, and we'll get into that a little bit more. Akeem King, I'm just random. These are just random ideas, random thoughts. Akeem King, in place of the injured Trey Flowers, who has a kind of a hip pointer, should be back this week, according to Pete, at a Pro Football Focus grade of 42.7, the lowest of the Seattle defense against Atlanta, allowing 7 catches on 7 targets for 131 yards. Akeem King, going into the preseason and the season, he was one of those guys that we were looking at, Keith, as potentially a starter in the nickel, potentially fighting for some of those snaps on the outside corner spot. And Akeem King has just not held up his end of the bargain.
Yeah, so I mean, far this year, our optimism with King from last year came from the Kansas City game, where they brought him in as a third safety rather than a corner and matched him up against Travis Kelce at tight end, and absolutely shut Kelce down, which nobody does. I mean, nobody does. He's like the best tight end in football right now. And Akeem won that battle. And so we were like, okay, if that's who this guy is, he's been on the practice squad, he's worked his way up, he was a special teams player after that. You know, maybe this is the Byron Maxwell situation where it's just a guy that puts in his time and eventually gets his opportunity. But then this year he's kind of come out and not looked great. When he's got playing time, and in this game, you know, he was a liability, and it was really apparent when you compare him to the guy on the other side, because Shaquille Griffin has played extremely well this year and had maybe his best game as a pro in this game.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I was a little worried after the first game. I think the first game, Griffin struggled a little bit, and I was like, I don't know. And then he's just really turned it on since. I mean, he's had a great season, top 10 corner type season in the NFL, which is definitely what the doctor ordered for this defense. There just seems like there's just so many other holes. So let's just go through a few more things. So Seahawks improved to 7-0 under Pete Carroll when opposing quarterbacks throw for more than 400 yards. What's that all about, Keith? 400 yards passing against the Seahawks doesn't seem to make any difference at all, whether we win or lose.
The reason why the Seahawks are 7-0 in those situations is that it's not like teams are running up the score on Seattle by throwing it a lot. It's that Seattle is ahead, and these teams are throwing the ball a ton of times and trying to get a bunch of yards because they have to make up for the fact that Seattle's winning. Matt Schaub threw 52 passes for 460 yards. The one thing in there is you look at like an 8.8 yards per attempt average. That's good. Rating.
And a lot of that came in the
99.8
second half.
A lot of it did come in the second half, but you know, the stats that he put up are good. But the fact is they came in the second half when the Seahawks went into halftime up
24-0.
Yeah, it was up 24-0.
But Atlanta outscored Seattle 20-3 in the second half. After halftime, Atlanta outgained Seattle 346 yards to 86 yards. They had 21 first downs to Seattle's 3. Matt Schaub overall, 39-52, 460 yards, but he was 26-32 for 309 yards after half. So the problem, though, is A, they were behind. So Seattle's got the lead the entire time, okay? We won by 7 points at the end? 27-20. Those are just empty yards in a sense, you know? I mean, they're marching down the field, they're scoring points.
They weren't empty, though, because
I mean, they were one turnover away from tying that game, basically coming back in that game.
And it was so that where they fumbled the ball and, you know, Blair knocked the ball out.
Quote unquote, fumbled.
Down near the goal line and the Seahawks recovered. That was a very questionable call on whether that was actually a fumble or not. And honestly,
a Seattle player was touching him when his knee was down before the ball was loose. I'm just going to say it. It wasn't a fumble. Now, in real time, on the field, yeah, you could probably make that call on the field. I get the call on the field. But after review, it's hard to argue that his knee was not down and a Seattle player was touching him as his knee was down and the ball, he was extending the ball out with his arm, but that ball had not yet been hit loose.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard. Anyway, we got it.
So what they were looking at with that was not his knee, but his shoulder. And
or forearm or whatever, right.
Yeah, and so he was extending, but Blair had his hand on the ball and was pushing the ball. And so they said it was difficult to determine whether or not possession had been lost.
I tell you what, if that call had been down on the field and like Pete Carroll would have thrown a challenge or whatever, I don't think that call gets reversed now.
Yeah. If whatever the call was on the field was what was going to stay because it was that close. But I mean, it was that they were that touchdown away from tying the game. So I don't consider Schaub's passing yards in the second half to be empty yards. He led them back.
Well, I say that in the sense that I think we probably could have turned on the offense at will at some point if we had to, given if the score became tied or whatever, but maybe not. I mean, maybe psychologically right at that point, it's over for the Seahawks because they've literally lost a 24-0 lead. It would be crazy. This would be crazy. So anyway, the first half though, we couldn't do anything wrong. I mean, we marched up and down the field. We had 130 yards rushing in the half. Chris Carson looked amazing. I mean, they were getting big, huge chunk plays out of the running game. Wilson didn't have to pass very much, but when he did, he was accurate. The pass catches that Lockett had were crazy, Keith. Like,
oh, some of them were just
I don't even understand how they were completed, but they were. That like zero window to throw a ball into and the two I'm talking about, Lockett actually made the catch one-handed on both those catches. He didn't even catch it with his hand. He literally caught both those balls with his forearm and in between his bicep and his forearm and in the elbow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just crazy. So Carson, 20 carries, 90 yards, a touchdown. Rashad Penny got involved in this game. 8 carries, 55 yards. He looked really good. And I was, the whole time I was thinking, oh my God, now we can't trade him. I don't want to trade him. I want to keep him. It would be silly to trade Rashad Penny, given the fact that we depend so much on our running game to be successful. To have a guy like that in the back pocket seems to make a lot of sense.
One of the things that was good to see was when Penny came in, they weren't just going, okay, let's run the Chris Carson plays with the different runner. They actually had plays figured out and lined up and ready to go for Rashad Penny's strengths. They got him on some pitch plays outside where that speed mattered, and he did great. He had a very big day. I mean, he only had 8 carries, but for 55 yards, that's a 6.9, yards per carry average. That's huge. And so with the idea that he can do that, if he can continue to play at that high of a level, like, that's where they need him. That's what they want from him. But part of it is that they played to his strengths instead of playing to Chris Carson's strengths with Penny on the field. So that was nice to see.
So a few more just random things. Seattle has a 6-game win streak on 10 a.m. kickoffs. So that whole thing that we suffered through the entire franchise history through its first 35 years no longer exists anymore. That's good to know. Russell Wilson's the first QB in history to record at least 1 touchdown and 0 interceptions in 8 consecutive road games, which is pretty amazing. That's consistency. That's how you win on the road. So that stat is completely tied to game together. 6-game win streak at 10 a.m. and Russell Wilson being as consistent as he is without turnovers. That's how you win in the NFL. That's how Pete likes to win. So how about DK Metcalf, Keith? He continues to impress through 8 games, 22 receptions, 402 yards, 4 TDs, 8.9 yards per attempt, an 8.8 touchdown percentage. He's everything that we thought that he would be on the ceiling for a rookie, especially when we talked about him in preseason.
Both a rookie and a rookie in this offense, where he's not getting, they only throw the ball a few times a game. So he has to make the most of very few,
opportunities.
Very few opportunities. And so, you go through and you look at this. We're halfway through, so let's project it out, right? You're looking at 46 receptions for 804 yards, 8 touchdowns. I mean, that is an incredible rookie year.
That is the only thing
I don't like about it. The only thing that I don't really like about it is that, those 23 receptions that he has comes on 45 targets. He's at just barely over 50% catch rate.
I think that catch rate is going to go up because of the way that they're using him. Not everything now is a over the top route. There are a lot of seam routes now, a lot of crossing routes he's starting to get involved with. So I would anticipate that to go up, which is good news for him. I got to say this. Bobby Wagner now leads the franchise all time with 985 tackles. And KJ Wright, well, the side note, KJ Wright moved into fourth place all time on the team as well.
So who did Bobby Wagner pass? Do you know?
I didn't write it down. I was going to look and I ran out of time.
Eugene Robinson, safety.
Wow.
He was the guy that
I didn't know Eugene Robinson had that many tackles as a safety. Holy cow.
Oh, he did. That'll tell you, during a lot of the time when he was playing, the defense wasn't good again, especially against the run, and they were getting into the linebackers and past the linebackers quite a bit. And so he was coming up and making a lot of plays, too many, far too many. He was also a really good tackler and a good player and had great instincts. And he was the team's all time leading tackler.
Do you know who KJ Wright moved past to get into fourth place?
No.
Nose tackle. Mm-hmm. Joe Nash was fourth place before KJ Wright. Can you imagine Joe Nash having that many tackles? I mean, that's a major accomplishment for a nose tackle.
So we've now go 1, 2, and 4, 5. Who was third? Do you know?
God, I don't have that okay. Information. Yeah, sorry.
Maybe
we can do that in the off season. One of our shows, we can have a history of the franchise show or something. That would be kind of cool. Come up with all sorts of random stats.
I did the Eugene Robinson one because I knew that was when we heard, he passed and is now in first. I'm like, I bet that's who it is. But I wasn't, completely sure. I had to go in and look, and I was like, oh yeah. But then it didn't occur to me till later when I saw that KJ Wright was now the fourth leading tackler. in franchise history that I probably should have looked at who he passed and who the one guy in the middle is. But by then I was, yeah.
We'll figure it out. Okay, a few more random things, and then we'll talk about what's going on with the defense in the first half of the season. 2013 Seattle defense allowed 52 explosive plays, pass plays. 2014, 56 explosive pass plays. In 2019, in half a season, we've already allowed 43 explosive pass plays.
Yuck.
That just kind of, that shows, that gives you a little glimpse into that, because Pete hates that, right? That's the worst possible thing that Pete doesn't want his defense exposed to is explosive plays. And here we are. We're going to, I mean, it's just, it's not good.
Well, it comes down to they're not getting after the quarterback. They thought they were going to have a good pass rush this year with Clowney and Ansa, but Ansa has been kind of a non-factor. And so they haven't had a good pass rush. And on top of that, when you've got a guy like Tedrick Thompson as your free safety, you're giving up a lot of plays. And that's just what's going to happen. You can't get to the quarterback. They have time. And then you're expecting someone like Tedrick to cover down deep down the field. You're going to get beat. It happens.
Seahawks have run 334 defensive snaps in base personnel this year. 69%. Yep. Next close is Arizona at 226 snaps. You could argue, you know, based on our defensive rankings, which I'll get into, this is the worst defense that Pete Carroll's had since he came here, except for when he came in 2010, 2011, when those defenses struggled a little bit before they actually rebuilt them. But they were a lot older then. You know, they were recycling players and getting young, but in that process, they were not very good. It's tough because they went through kind of that minor, quote-unquote, reset, rebuild, whatever. And the process of rebuilding that defense, making it younger, making it more relevant, putting it back into the image that he wants it in. And they're just having a hard time. And it's hard to know exactly what it is because they do have a lot of talent, but you have a lot of guys, and we can go through it. You have a lot of guys that aren't playing up to a Pete Carroll standard. You know, they're playing at or below their historical averages, you know, guys like Ansa. Mm-hmm. And Ford hasn't had a tremendous impact this year yet. I mean, we haven't talked about him at all as far as making an impact on the running plays or disrupting lanes or anything. Jerron Reed just came back. I don't know how much time we're going to give him to like make his big impact. Jackson is average. Wright is having a good tackling season, but he's not. He's lost a step. Jamar Taylor at nickel is just not good. Kendricks is great in space, but is just a below average tackler. It just is what it is.
He's struggling this year. He's not been as good this year as he was last year.
Rasheem Green showed a little bit of spark and promise on rushing the passer, but hasn't really done much. He's got a couple sacks and that's it. Collier hasn't done anything yet. Flowers is having a great tackling campaign, and he's okay in coverage with promise to get better, but he's still just average. Akeem King, again, another guy that's below average. You could probably list a few other guys. Jadeveon Clowney is disruptive as heck overall, making plays, but he's just one guy. Shaquem Griffin's having a great year. So, but overall, that defense is middling at best. Rankings. I'll just go through them really quick since I'm right here. Seattle does have a +7 turnover ratio. That's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the Seahawks are 30th in the league in allowing 6.2 yards per play. The two teams that have allowed more are like have one win combined. The defense is 20th in points allowed at 24.5, 20th. 23rd in yards allowed, 376 yards per game. 27th versus the pass. 27th versus the pass. 15th versus the rush. And that's the one thing that they set out to improve upon last year. And they didn't. They haven't yet. They're basically the same as they were last year as versus the rush. That all points to a defense that's near 20th, 21st overall in defense. So what's going on, Keith?
Well, there's a couple things that are going on. They have this idea that they want to play in their base defense because they think that gets their best 11 guys on the field. And that's not necessarily wrong, because they do like Kendricks far more than they like.
Yeah, but before you add Blair-like to the Taylor equation.
Well, yeah, but we're talking, most of the time you're talking about a cornerback, not a safety, when you're going to the nickel. And so, getting your best 11 guys on the field it's not going to be Taylor, right? It's going to be Kendricks. And so I think that's why they've been trying to stay in the base, and that it clearly isn't working. The league has been going over this transformation over the last 4 or 5 years where the nickel is the new base, where your teams are in the nickel, 60-65% of the time. Sometimes it's, into the high 70s. And that's not just for the teams that are, getting thrown on a lot. That's just standard across the league. And the Seahawks are trying to go against that and go back to this old school, base defense. And it's really not working. I think now that they've got Blair, now that Quandre Diggs is in town, and now that McDougald is healthy again, I do think you're going to see those three guys on the field a bit more. We're going to see less of the base defense and more. Even if it's just big nickel with three safeties, I think we're going to get more speed on the field, and that's going to help. So that's part of it. They haven't been good in places where they need to be good. They needed an upgraded safety, and so.
So they certainly have a talent deficit, and we know that. But do they have a coaching deficit? Do they have? Go ahead.
Okay, so when I look at what the defense is doing schematically, I don't like it because what they seem to be doing is dropping those three linebackers to basically a point where they're going to drop to a certain spot and then man their zone from that spot rather than going, okay, well, I have, a certain zone and I'm going to base what I'm doing based on the routes through it. And that kind of stuff. It's more of a spot drop in the zone, and it's kind of ugly. It really just is because it's not working. And there's a couple of different teams that also do that, and they're also getting beat. And I don't like the scheme that Ken Norton's put together.
We're getting attacked over the middle. In the middle of the field, tight ends are beating us, running backs are beating us, screens are beating us. Slot receivers are beating us.
Yeah. And I think that they need to, even if they were to go back to running some of the same things that, okay, I was going to say, even if they go back to running some of the same concepts they ran in previous years, even if they don't go back to the cover three, where they have three deep, but, and continue to play in the cover two with two deep back there in order to give the free safety a little more help. The concepts that they're using underneath and with the linebackers and that kind of stuff just aren't, they're not conducive to being able to stop modern NFL offenses. It's just not working.
Yeah, I agree. So do you want to talk about the Atlanta game at all, specifically with regards to certain players or things you saw, things you'd like to mention before we kind of move on to maybe taking a quick look at the Tampa game, and then let's kind of do a half season review and maybe look forward to the remaining eight games.
So the only thing I want to say about the Atlanta game is it was great to see the team get off to a hot start. They ran up that 24-0 lead. And I absolutely hated that they went into don't lose mode after that. They went into a prevent defense and pushed everybody back.
They went into a prevent offense too.
Yeah. And then they went to, we're going to run, punt on offense. They had six plays in the third quarter. Five of them were runs. And, you gave Atlanta every opportunity that they needed to get back into the game. And it would have been great to see them continue to push. You don't have to like throw the ball every down and whatever, but try and put some drives together, put a drive together, use up the time rather than just, running it into the line and punting. They just way, way, way too conservative. And I hate the prevent defense. The only thing the prevent defense prevents is winning. So, because it never prevents teams from moving the ball and scoring. And this game was an example of it. So I just think the lead was great, but the coaches just, they use that as an excuse to just go into this turtle shell, and it didn't work. They were one questionable fumble away from having this game be tied and or possibly losing. And against a team that bad, you can't do that.
Yeah, it's kind of a momentum killer. It's one of those things where I get it, as a fan that have been around the team for a long time, since the beginning, 44 years, right? I've seen this act many, many, many times. It's predictable, kind of how it turns out. Here's the deal. With Pete Carroll, it's turned out more times than not. So you got to give him the benefit of the doubt there. However, it squashes your momentum going into next week. All these other things kind of come into play. You kind of want to take a look at certain things, the way that you can expose a defense. You kind of want to check out, how your offense does against certain schemes, and you can try different things. You can try different combinations. They went through, different players out there, like on the offensive line, different stuff, right? You can do all that, but you can't do any of that if you can't get a first down. So you've got to operate under the mode of, we'd like to go score some more points. I mean, Marshawn Lynch said, "Hey, coach, can we still score?" You remember that quote, leading up to the playoffs in December, back in 2014 or whatever it was, Marshawn Lynch was questioning, our conservative approach in one of the games that we were conservative. We went up big, and then he still wanted to score. And it's the same thing. It is what it is. And 24 points is a lot to overcome for any team. And so I'm sure Pete was like at halftime going, okay, so let's sit Dwayne Brown. Let's play Cody Barton for a series or two. Let's try this. Let's do this. Let's keep giving the ball to Carson because he's out of his mind in the first half. Not Arizona, but Atlanta went into halftime and goes, "These guys are kicking our ass. You guys got any pride?" And they came out and showed that they had some pride. And they started moving the ball, and we let them. We let them move the ball. We took the pedal off the gas, and we allowed them to complete everything that they wanted to complete underneath, and which was by design. That sort of thing takes time off the clock. I get it. It's a game of attrition at that point. It doesn't mean I have to agree with it or like it or love it or whatever. But here we are. We won the game. We're 6-2. I'm over it already. I'm over that whole game. You go into CX Twitter, it's just a bloodbath out there with people calling for Pete's head and Schottenheimer and Ken Norton, and everyone's needs to leave and go, and we have to start. It's like, come on, let's be real. We're 6-2. We have some flaws. We always knew that we did. We're going to have to overcome them somehow to win games in the second half of the season. And that's where we're at. So let's go figure out how to do that. So.
Yeah. I'm with you on all of that. The thing is, what people are looking at is they go, okay, they're 6-2 because they've played a bunch of bad teams.
Yeah, they have. Let's talk about that.
And the play that they have, right? They're playing well enough to beat these bad teams, but they don't play bad teams anymore. The rest of the season is against good teams, and you can't do the things that they've been doing and continue to win.
So Seattle has 6 wins, and they've come against teams with a combined record of 13 wins, 31 losses, and 1 tie. In the second half of the season, opponents have a combined record of 38 wins, 20 losses, 1 tie. Just 2 teams that we face have a losing record, the Bucks and the Cardinals. Cardinals are improving. Bucks are kind of crap, but they're better than their record indicates the Bucks are. So we got to be careful with that one. Everything else is crazy. I mean, we talked right before the show, we were going to mention Seattle has the toughest remaining schedule by win percentage at 0.642. That's a pretty heavy schedule remaining. And we're going to go over the second half schedule in just a bit. So you're right. We can't play the same way that we've played in the first half of the season in the second half and expect to win. We've got 6 wins, likely going to need at least 4 more wins to get to 10 and into the playoffs. But even 10, the way some of these other NFC teams are playing, may not guarantee that you've got that last remaining wild card. May have to get to 11. If you look at the schedule, if we're being completely honest with us and the way that we are playing currently, getting 5 more wins may be a challenge. So let's take a look at that.
Definitely starts this week because home against the Bucks. This is probably the worst team they play between now and the end of the year. It's at home. They've already lost 2 at home. They better go get a win here because a third loss at home against the weakest team that they're going to face between now and the end of the season. That's not a good setup for this team to make a run.
4 weeks ago, the Bucks beat the Rams 55-40.
Isn't that crazy? Did you watch any of that game?
I did.
Basically, the Rams defense no-showed. That it was like every play by the Bucks.
I know. That was actually a very entertaining game, I do have to say. And that was a game that Jameis Winston was played out of his mind. And Jameis Winston is one of the most frustrating, inconsistent quarterbacks you will find in the NFL. He's got 14 TDs, awesome, but 12 interceptions. And then he's got he's got some fumbles, and he's been sacked 28 times. They don't have a bad offense. Overall, their offense is 5th in points, 15th in yards. But their defense is probably about as poor as Atlanta's defense. Give or take. They're 31st against the pass, but they're first against the rush, 68.6 yards per game. We definitely need to win this game. This is a must-win game on the schedule. Even though we're 6-2, we've got to win these games that are quote-unquote gimmies because of the remaining schedule. So do you want to talk in at all further about Tampa Bay, or do you just kind of want to get into kind of the schedule a little bit, what we need to do to kind of improve? And I mean, I do have some stats as far as individual players are concerned on the Seahawks, but maybe we can get to that at the tail end.
Yeah. The Bucks are just not that interesting of a team. They're not that good. They're not that well coached. They've got a few nice players.
Mike Evans is great.
Mike Evans is great. O.J. Howard at tight end is really good. In fact, he's a guy that it's being floated around that he's in a trade option, and the Seahawks have apparently, inquired. But from the stuff I've read, the Bucks are asking for a ton for him, so I don't expect that to happen. So it kind of comes down to you look at all this and you go, they've got a few nice players, but overall it's not a great football team. The Seahawks better go win.
I think that our defense needs to show up. Like our second half defense against Atlanta can't come to this game. We need that first half defense where we go in, make stuff happen, kind of create some turnovers. Jameis Winston can still run the ball against the Titans last week. He had 8 carries for 53 yards. He can still move around. The Bucs actually outgained the Titans, 389 yards to 246 yards. And they still lost because they had 4 turnovers. So they're mistake prone. And they also, overall, I watched quite a bit of tape on them. And they can't close games. They can't close out games. And they make untimely mistakes. And the ball just hasn't bounced their way, you know. And that's why I think they're a slightly better team than their 2-5 record. They could definitely have two more wins on their record. And then it would be a completely different kind of feel to this game. But at 2-5, they come in. We need to beat this team. Bruce Arians is the coach. You know he's going to muddy the waters in this game. I think he likes to come to Seattle and cause disruption. So I'm hoping for the best on this game. All right. The team has 6 wins. When we went into our prediction show, Keith, at this point in the season, both of us had forecasted 3 losses at this this point.
Yeah, we did not think Atlanta was going to be as bad as they were.
True. We both predicted a loss.
We both expected Atlanta to be a formidable team this year, and they aren't. Their defense has not been playing near to the level that we expected based on the talent there. And quite frankly, the offense hasn't been as good either. So, you know, that was, I think, where we kind of got off there. If we had seen, you know, if our crystal balls had been clear enough, we could have seen it that Atlanta was going to be bad. We probably would have had 6-2. But you know what? They outperformed our expectations.
Yes.
And I'll take that.
Perfect. So going forward, we both have a win against the Buccaneers, and then the showdown, the first real showdown of the season, the likely 7-2 Seahawks would face the possibly undefeated 49ers. I can't remember where their bye is at, if they have a bye this week or not. So the 49ers are currently 7-0. Can you believe that, Keith? 7-0 49ers. Their defense is legit, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to jump too far. I don't want to discount the Buccaneers completely, but I'm just going to say we're going to try to get a win at home there. That 49er game, though, on November 11th is definitely one of those Monday showdown games. At the 49ers, ESPN. That game is hyped.
7-2 Seahawks versus the most likely 8-0 49ers on Monday Night Football. I mean, that's like, you know, that's a network executive's dream right there. I mean, that's going to get massive ratings.
Yeah, that should get ratings for sure. And then we have a bye week, and that bye week after that 49er game will be ideal, actually, for the Seahawks. Get healthy, make some decisions on the roster, et cetera. And then we go back out on the road, and pay attention to all these road games, too, because they stack up right here, as well as primetime games. Seahawks versus the Eagles at Philadelphia. Philadelphia is at 4-4 now, but they could be sneaky good, you know, at the end of the season. That's also a primetime game, NBC. Vikings come after the 49 or the Seahawks, the 6-2 Vikings. The Vikings, they're just an interesting team. They're actually really pretty good, and that game is going to be really interesting for the Seahawks, but it's an ESPN game, 5:15 p.m. We both have it down as a win. I think the Vikings are who we thought they were before the season. Is there any reason to think that we would think any different of them at this point, or expect a different outcome?
No, they've been what we expected. They've been what we expected. I think
Kirk Cousins has been playing well.
He has been, and I think that is unsustainable. So I do expect them to come down to earth a little bit near the end of the season when Kirk Cousins pulls a Kirk Cousins and, you know, starts being inconsistent or, you know, has a drop off in his play, because he'll do that. And he's done that every year that he's been in the league. So that's going to be a possibility, but they're still a good team. I mean, that's a stacked roster all over. I mean, the quarterback is the...
That team could come into the Seattle and beat Seahawks, especially since Seattle's already lost 2 at home this year. You know, we could have 3 losses right there. Just saying, we could. I mean, they're primetime games. We should be winning those games historically, but those are tough teams. And unless our offense gets turned loose, which could happen, and our defense tightens up a little bit, those are going to be like 50-50 games. And then at the Rams, that game is interesting. I've got that one circled because the Rams are currently 5-3, But they wouldn't want to lose to the Seahawks two games in a row. So that game is going to be tough. And that's the fourth consecutive primetime game currently. They could bump one of those games possibly, but that's the way it is right now.
That Rams game, especially because it's in LA, it's not in Seattle, and the Rams have already lost to Seattle, and the Rams look, they're mortal. This is not the Rams team from the last couple of years. That defense isn't good. The offense can be shut down. And so they, if they lose another game between here and there, they may be in desperation mode. And we'll see how that goes, but that is another game to mark on the calendar. Because the week after that is on the road, 10 a.m. against the Panthers. And we don't know what the Panthers are going to look like because we don't have any idea what Cam Newton's going to be. Is he going to be playing? Or are they still going with Allen there at quarterback and that kind of stuff? But again, that's on the road. So you look
at, and they're currently a 4-3 team. I mean, they're not bad team.
These five games that we've just mentioned, at 49ers, at Eagles, home Vikings, at Rams, at Panthers. So you have in a five game stretch, they have four games on the road.
That's brutal.
Against good teams. That is a brutal.
And four or five stretch. Are on prime time. Mm-hmm. You don't want to embarrass yourself on prime time, man.
The Seahawks have to go. I honestly think the Seahawks have to go over that stretch of five games. They need to go 3-2.
That would be nice.
Because if you go 2-3 in that stretch, then you're already at five losses with two more games to go, thinking that you may have to win both to get into the playoffs.
And one of those is the Cardinals at Seattle. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that and we should probably count that as a win, even though the Cardinals are improving. The Cardinals have won two games since we played them. They're improving. The 49ers at home to end the season could be one of those epic games. It's lined up to be one of those games where 49ers may not need the win. Seattle may need it. Like, everything counts. Everything matters in that game for Seattle. I don't know. It's hard to predict.
Yeah, the 49ers might not play a bunch of their starters in that game.
Well, here's the deal.
If they roll, they're going to be come in, get a series or two, then get off the field and don't get hurt so we can get ready for the next for the playoffs. And at that point, the Seahawks better win that game.
So Seattle has, that's a rough schedule by any, by any measurement, but the 49ers also have tough schedule. So I'm going to ask you, can we catch the 49ers? Is it possible that we could still win this division? Is it possible that we could still be looking at some sort of first round bye? So the 49ers have other games than just these, but these are the heavy hitters. Week 10 against the Seahawks, 6-2. Week 12 against the Packers, 7-1. Week 13, Ravens, 5-2. Week 14, Saints, 7-1. Week 16, Rams, 5-3. And then the Seahawks to close the season at week 17, 6-2. Those are current records right now. Those are good teams. That's six games with teams that are every bit as good as they are probably, or really close to it. Are the 49ers going to lose some of those games?
I would say so. I mean, they like Seattle have played a pretty weak schedule up till now. You look at kind of where their schedule is. I mean, they got some tough games. Like if they go in and beat the Packers, well, that's going to be an impressive win. That's a signature win for them. But I could see them losing two or three games of those ones that you listed pretty, pretty consistently. I see it as a definite possibility, but in order to get, the Seahawks to catch them, right. The Seahawks are currently two losses behind.
We could beat the 49ers straight up twice.
So if the Seahawks beat the 49ers straight up twice, then yes, they're catching them or whatever. So that's
let me ask you this. Do the Seattle Seahawks have a chance to be a better team than you think they are? Or are you resigned at this point after seeing eight games to what they have shown? Which is a really pretty decent offense that, if turned loose, could score on anybody at any time. or they're too conservative and get in their own way. And in a defense,
that's no matter how
you measure it, the defense is just not good. Is there room for improvement?
There's definitely room for improvement. And getting Quandre Diggs out there and Blair out there instead of having Tedrick Thompson out there is a major improvement. And then when you got Bradley McDougal healthy and coming back and being able to run him out there in the nickel and, you know, having actually go with the big nickel rather than the base defense more. I mean, I expect the defense to be better, not like massively better, but I expect it to be better. And then when you go on the offensive side, like the only thing holding Seattle's offense back is Brian Schottenheimer. If he would get out of Russell Wilson's way, this offense would be electric. And we saw that when the headsets died and Wilson had to call the offense by himself. And all of a sudden, I mean, that was possibly the best drive that the Seahawks have had all year.
You have to admit that first half watching Chris Carson and Rashad Penny run against Atlanta was definitely pleasing to the eye. I mean, and highly efficient. I mean, they took Klein off the clock. They ran the ball at over 6 yards a carry and looked good doing it.
Yeah, I mean, true. But also, you know, look at the way the yards came. It wasn't just they were turning around and handing off to Carson on every play. They were throwing the ball. They were throwing it deep. They were spreading the team out. They were.
Do you know what the pass rush ratio was this last game? I think they ran 58 plays, and I think 32 of them or so were rush plays, right? 32 and 20, something like that.
Wilson only had 20 pass attempts, which is insanely low. But you're up big, of course, you're not going to throw the ball much. But they came in, they did, the very first play was a pass, and they did throw it around. They had this nice mix in the first half. Yeah, they leaned on the running game a little bit and pushed the thing there. But it wasn't that they started running the ball and then only threw on third and long. They started throwing the ball and then came in and mixed in the run and kept the Falcons defense guessing. They had no idea what Seattle was going to do. And then they went back to the same old junk that we've seen in the past, where they just hand it off on first and second down and then ask Russell Wilson to play hero ball on third down. And that's what they did in the second half. And if they can stop doing that and actually let Wilson control the offense and let him do his Russell Wilson things and throw the ball and use play action and all of that, this offense would be much better than it has been. And it's already been good, but they need to get out of their own way. The coaches are there for some reason. They're just making this more difficult on the offense than it needs to be.
How about the defense, Keith? 20th in points allowed, 23rd in yards, 27th pass, 15th rush in the league, 30th in the league, allowing 6.2 yards per play. Is there anything that we can do to get those numbers down?
Absolutely. They can get Tedrick Thompson off the field and on the bench.
And the only reason that didn't happen this time was because of injuries.
Yeah. I mean, Bradley McDougal was still hurt, and Quandre Diggs, because his hamstring was tight, didn't feel he got enough practice time with the new scheme and the new team to throw him out there. And so they went with Tedrick again at free safety. But this week, you know, I fully expect this to be the Quandre Diggs, Marquise Blair safety tandem. And they're also going to get Trey Flowers back. So this is going to be the most talent has been on the field for the secondary that they've
had.
So
let me ask you this.
This year.
What is getting in the way of Seattle creating some sort of pass rush or pressure on a consistent basis that helps that secondary out?
You know, that's a great question, because there's enough talent there. They shouldn't be having this problem. I mean, you've got Clowney, who's being super disruptive. And
now,
it's
they,
all over
they
the
did
line.
Have
they
six or seven hits this last game.
But then you have, they've been running a lot of Puna Ford and the other big run stuffer in the middle.
Earl Mitchell?
Yeah. And so you've got run stuffers in there in the middle, and that's not helping. And getting Reed back should help. They need to get him turned loose a little bit, and they also need to get a little more creative up front instead of just rushing four straight ahead, especially against a guy like Schaub who doesn't move around. And when you knew they were going to pass because they were down 24, there was no reason not to do some twists and some stunts and different things to try and get a guy like Clowney free, or to get pressure on the inside by bringing a guy like Collier, who lines up, you know, at the end, but then comes inside after the snap and, you know, and attacks an A gap type of thing. They could have done all those sorts of different things to try and make it easier on the pass rushers to get to the quarterback. And they didn't do any of them. They just rushed straight ahead on every play. Just keep going straight ahead.
Well, we're talking about the entire season has been like that.
Yeah.
So is it a scheme thing? I mean, it's Pete Carroll's defense, right? But Ken Norton's in charge. Are you unhappy with the job that he's done, or are you unhappy with the job that Pete Carroll has kind of told him to do, or are we just seriously in a talent deficit situation and they're running the best scheme that they can to help protect their guys and make them as good as possible, and this is about as good as it can get?
I don't believe that this is as good as it's going to get. There's more talent here than they're using. I don't think they're using
are we sure
in a good way. Yeah.
Are we sure? I mean, on paper, I agree with you, but in reality, it hasn't shown that way.
So you're telling me that you're not sure that Bobby Wagner is an elite player. You're telling me you're not
Bobby
sure
Wagner's an elite player, but I'm saying that he may not be scheme wise being put in the best position to do the maximum job that he's now. And he had a sack this game. That was encouraging. But are they throwing him into coverage too much and moving him away from the line of scrimmage more than he should be?
This is what I mean. Like, the talent is there, but they're not using it well. And so
look at guys like Ansa. Ansa appears to be I'm not going to say washed up, but he appears to be not completely recovered from whatever he's dealing with and hasn't really given us anything yet. Ford hasn't yet given us what he gave us last year. I'm just talking just last year.
Ford's two games
hasn't come in and done anything yet. Wright, KJ Wright's lost a step, and you know he has. I mean, he's playing okay, but he's lost a step. Taylor's not been good at all. Kendricks has been hit and miss on tackling, and granted, hit and miss on coverage too. He's been okay on some things. Others, he's missed. Green has been okay in the first half of the season. The first half of the season, but in the last three or four games hasn't done a lot. Collier hasn't been out there at all. Flowers is okay in coverage, but not special. It just seems like there's a whole bunch of players I just listed there that have key rotation roles or starter roles that haven't been playing at either above average or historically having their best season. We haven't had any of that yet in this defense.
Well, I feel like you're making my point, because if you've got Puna Ford and Jerron Reed at your defensive tackles and you can't get that duo of talent to be able to make an impact, you're doing something wrong as a coaching staff. And it's not that these guys are suddenly awful, because they're not. They're good players. And I think you're underselling Puna Ford as far as what he's been doing this year and his ability to.
Well, certainly that's a hard position to evaluate if you're not going to watch the All-22, because they just don't show him, you know, in the middle taking up double teams and so forth.
Yeah. So, and I'll give you that Ansa hasn't been as good as we thought, but there is talent there, right? There is guys like Bobby Wagner, who's still an elite player. You've got a guy like Kendricks, who is a flawed player in some ways, but is really good in others, and they're not using him to those things. You've got a guy like KJ Wright, who's got all that veteran savvy and all that, you know, but he's lost a step. He's not the same KJ Wright that he used to be because of the knee injury. So he's going to be a little slower. So you need to account for that in your scheme and not ask him to do the same things you used to ask him to do. Because he's not quick enough to get there anymore. The coaching staff isn't necessarily putting these guys in a position to get the most out of their talent. And that's the problem that I have. That's the problem that the people on Twitter have, even though I think they take it a little overboard on as far as like they're crazy. But I want to see this coaching staff on both sides of the ball put the Seahawks players in a position to be successful. And I don't think they're doing that. I think they're putting... They're like, okay, this is what we want to do based on some philosophical thing. And they're not looking at the talent that they've got in the positions where they've got that talent and trying to use that. And honestly, that is one of the weaknesses of this team.
So speaking to that just a little bit, Blair has come in and gotten healthy and had an opportunity to show out because of injury. To Tedrick Thompson 1 week and then McDougal the next. And now it sounds like he's going to be a regular in there, which yep. is awesome news. I think he deserves that opportunity and has shown mm-hmm. with 11 tackles overall and causing that fumble that he's a guy that deserves and needs to be in there. And then guys like Diggs, you said, could come in and make an impact. How about guys like Cody Barton and Amadi that look like, I mean, they're rookies, but have a lot of upside. In a defense that's ranked 20th, 21st overall, do they deserve an opportunity to come in and maybe change that up a little bit?
Well, we don't see what they do at practice and that kind of stuff, so it's hard to say, oh, they deserve it. I'm not going to say they don't, because we don't know as far as what's going on there. But when I look at this defense and I go, okay, yeah, they're 20th. They're not good. And the biggest part to me is, in some ways, they just look slow. The team speed on defense just isn't there. So yeah, bring Cody Barton in. Let him play. We saw what he did in the preseason. That guy's got speed to burn. He looked really, really good. He had huge range. Like, get him in there. Get him some playing time. They did that in this last game. They pulled KJ Wright for a couple of series and let Cody Barton in there, and he made an impact. So, yeah, you know what? I'm all for it. Get him in there, get him on the field and get him some time, you know, take Ugo Amadi and put him in the slot, let him play the slot corner instead of Jamar Taylor. What's it going to be? Do you really think it's going to be worse? That was my, opinion.
No,
Tedrick Thompson. Like, why didn't they get, they needed to have gotten Blair in there a couple weeks earlier, because even with rookie mistakes and him like still learning the defense and everything, he wasn't going to be worse than, you know, Tedrick Thompson flailing at the feet of someone. And, you know, that's all he ever does. And they're not going to be worse. Get the speed out there, get Barton on the field, get, Amadi on the field, you know, just roll with it and get those guys out there. Give John Ursua some playing time. I mean, are you gaining anything with John Brown right now at wide receiver?
Like, I totally agree, Keith. That could be like getting a trade for a player in mid-season. You could trade for John Ursua.
Because they're young players and they're rookies doesn't mean they're not ready to play. It doesn't mean they're bad. They're younger, they're faster,
we need another guy that can get into open space and create, and that's a guy that could, you know, there isn't anybody else on the roster that's doing that.
Bring some energy onto the field, and I think getting those three players, Barton, Amadi, and Ursua, on the field just brings more energy in, and I think it would be a big lift for this team. And they need it. I mean, you're going into this, as we've already said, this really, really tough stretch. Okay, not this week, but after the bye, it's a really tough stretch. And if they can, do well in there, they're a playoff team. And so,
Let's talk about it. I want to talk about the schedule really quick, and we'll finish the show with this. Let's do some second half kind of predictions, if you will. So, after all of that discussion we just had, 20 minutes worth of who are we, what are we, and are we capable of being more? Are we capable of being more? And what do you expect the Seahawks to do in the second half of the season? And are we a one-and-done playoff team? Are we a playoff team? Or can we do some damage?
So right now, I think this is a playoff team. I think they have not played anywhere close to their best football. I think we saw a glimpse of it in the first half against Atlanta, where the offense and defense were both playing well. And then in the second half, you saw it fall apart. But that is what the Seahawks could be. Is what we saw in that first half, where the offense is super efficient. The defense gets off the field. I mean, the talent is there, I believe, and I've been saying this for a while, that this is a team that's 6-2, but they haven't played their best football. They haven't played up to their potential or even close to it. But we did see two quarters of it against the Falcons. And I think if that is anything, if that can be the sign, that can be the jumping off point for them to start putting it together as a team, then yeah, this is a team that can not only make the playoffs, but make a run in the playoffs. They may not catch the 49ers for the division, but this is a team that could go on the road and win a playoff game. And so I want to be optimistic and say, yeah, that's what it is. But at the same time, like, we've seen one half of good football by this team, and they've gotten by playing bad teams. They're not going to be playing bad teams now. So they can't just get by. They're going to have to play well to get those wins. And it's hard to feel optimistic about that given some of the decisions the coaches have been making lately.
So let's go through the games. You give me your prediction. Buccaneers at Seahawks.
Win.
Seahawks at 49ers.
Loss.
Seahawks at Eagles. You almost have to have that one now, huh?
I'm going to say loss.
Vikings at Seahawks.
Win.
I'm seeing what you're doing there. Seahawks at Rams.
Win.
God, that's going to be a good game. Mm-hmm. Seahawks at Panthers.
Originally
had this as a loss at the beginning of the year.
I think I'm going to have to stick with that. A loss.
Well, that got you your 2-2.
Keep going.
Cardinals at Seahawks.
That's a win.
And 49ers at Seahawks.
I'm going to say that's a win, and it's in part because I expect the 49ers to not be playing most of their star players.
So that takes you to 11-5. That beats your early season prediction by one win.
Yeah.
I'm similar. I think that the Eagles is a win and the Vikings might be a loss at home. I flipped those, but I've got – and that Panthers on the road, I think we're like 6-0 or 5-0 in the last five games at Carolina. So I like our chances there. But, yeah, it's going to be a tough slog. There's no question. I like our chances. Mm-hmm. I think we can get to 11, but unless that defense really tightens up and we become, in theory, a top 15 defense with a top 5 offense or top 7 or whatever, I don't know that winning in the playoffs is going to be our destiny. Because,
like I said,
they have to have a defense.
I think they can. I think we saw part of what this team's potential was this week. In that first half, and if
they need to get their swagger back, Keith, there's just no swagger on that defense.
But the thing about the playoffs is, I mean, you look at those like Eli Manning Giants teams that won two different Super Bowls. Those weren't great teams.
You look at the Rams last year that made it all the way to the Super Bowl with a crap defense.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a superior offense last year. It was dialed in, but we could be dialed in.
Yeah.
You know?
And so you end up with these kind of outliers. And what you need is you get into the playoffs and then see what happens, because you get an interception, you get a strip sack, that kind of thing. And it turns the game, and you pick up a win that you weren't expecting, or that, you know, weren't probably the better team as far as talent wise, but you get the win anyway. And, you know, now suddenly you're playing for a championship, and you got to get there first. Go get into the playoffs and then worry about it, because anything can happen once you get there.
What's your worst case scenario for the record?
The worst case scenario here is that they fall to 9-7.
Go 3-5.
the rest of the way out.
Yeah, and that could be that you could see that. I mean, they could lose against the 49ers. They could lose against the Eagles. They could lose at home against the Vikings. They could lose against the Rams. They could lose against the 49ers the second time.
They could lose against the Panthers. I mean, none of those games are gimmies. They're all tough games.
There's two games where you should win. There's Bucks. Probably another game that you're going to win that you shouldn't have won.
Yeah.
You're right.
Bucks and Cardinals, you better win those two. And
absolutely.
You got to win two others of all the rest of them. And to get to 10 wins, to have a chance at the playoffs. But all those other ones, those are tough games. They're all tough games. They're all ones that this team could lose. And so, worst case scenario, I think it ends up around 9-7. Best case scenario, I think you could end up 12-4. You know, get a couple lucky bounces.
You get on a roll here.
Yeah, or we could have something just absolutely crazy happen, like Jimmy Garoppolo's knee could be blown out again, like it was a couple of years ago. And
can't even believe you're saying this out loud.
And they could just fall off a cliff. I mean, this is one of the reasons why you don't just like, oh well, this team is really good, let's just throw in the towel and tank because there's no way we're beating, you know, them. No, because you never know what's going to happen. Like last year, the Rams for a while looked unbeatable because their offense was so good. And then Todd Gurley started having his knee problems and suddenly that offense came back down to earth. And that's why they scored 3 points in the Super Bowl and, haven't been good since Gurley started having his knee issues.
Well, there's only one defense that scares me on this entire schedule. And that's the 49ers. Their front is murderer's row. I mean, it's nuts. I'm worried about Russell Wilson. Like before the Seahawks 49ers game, I'll be asking the question, should we sit Russell Wilson?
And the answer will be no.
No, no. Actually, I think we can beat the 49ers front with Russell Wilson, but that's another conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fun stuff. This is why we play the games. This is the fun part of the season, everybody. 8 more games to go. This is where everything's do or die. Pete Carroll's teams come alive traditionally in November and December. They start playing real football, and they're at their best. And a lot of these games are in prime time. Again, the thing that the Seahawks excel at. I expect them to win. I expect them to pull it together, to find a way to get the defense tighter, to get the offense turned loose, and to get some wins. I just do. I think 11-5 is completely realistic. That was my win total to begin the season. I think I'm sticking with that. I think there is an outside chance that you could get to 12, but you got to win a lot of those games. You got to win. You got to win all but two of those games. So, anywho, to Lou.
if they get to 12 wins and they at least take one of the two from the 49ers,
they're a way better team than I thought they would be.
Yeah, and if they, like I said, if they do that, they get to 12 wins with that, including a victory against the 49ers. The division is not out of play. They still need help.
Well, it'd go down to that last week.
Yeah, they would need the Packers to help us out and that kind of stuff. But
you know, the 49ers, Packers, Saints, and Seahawks, and you throw the Vikings in are just great teams. And the AFC has two teams. You know, it's nuts. So anyway, let's get out of here. Let's go get this win. We jumped all over today, and we jumped way ahead, but it's halfway. We kind of wanted to evaluate that, so apologies. But let's focus one game at a time. Tampa Bay is in front of us. Let's go get this thing. It's at home. Let's rally around that. We haven't been protecting home field like we should have been protecting it the last few weeks, so let's get that done. So anything else, Keith, and we'll head out.
No, that summed it up perfectly. Just go protect home field. It hasn't been a thing this year. Go do it. Go win a game at home.
Go figure out a way to get your swagger, Seahawks, especially the defense. Go get some swagger. Go get some turnovers. Strut your stuff. Anyway, follow Keith on Twitter @MyersNFL. I'm @MWSeahawk. The show is at Hawks Playbook, and hawksplaybook.com has everything archived. All the shows are up there. You can go back and listen to the very first one if you want. And until next time, Keith, go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Hawks Playbook podcast listeners, thanks for joining us for another edition of the show. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Podcasts, or listen at our website, hawksplaybook.com. Follow us on Twitter. Phil is at NWCHawk. Keith is at MyersNFL. And the show is at Hawks Playbook. See you next week, and go Hawks.